All right, I think it's working.
Are we recording?
Okay. All right, welcome to Two Dudes, One God Pod. We're back with another guest today. So it's Trey Thetford and...
Pat Lacey.
And Colby...
Kneipp.
Can you spell that?
K-N-E-I-P-P.
Kneipp. We should have everybody spell their last name.
Yeah, because that can be a little bit confusing sometimes.
Yeah.
Especially in East Texas circles.
Yeah. Especially that being like German or something like that. Ain't no telling.
Colby made a little drive today with his fiance to come be on this podcast. And I don't know Colby real well, but he was my daughter's wrangler, like camp counselor at camp last summer. And I'm excited to find out a little bit more about the AFCC Cow Camp Wrangler program that he's involved with, and to find out a little bit more about him. So, Colby, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, about your salvation story, kind of introduce yourself.
Yeah, so I'm 20 years old. I've been in Texas my whole life, and I guess my salvation story really starts. I was 8 years old when I got baptized, and when I was saved in a Baptist church, I wasn't really mature, old enough to really understand the root meaning of what it meant to be saved and what it meant to give your life to Christ and all that. And that really came a few years later when I first went to Cal Camp and I really was truly able to get poured into an aspect to figure out, you know, what it means. Like, you are dying to yourself and you're living like Christ. You're trying to, you know, portray yourself as much as you can like Christ every day to try to lead more people to Him. And to be able to share the salvation gift that you've been given with everybody else. And so that was my truly, the point that I was truly saved was that camp. Mm-hmm. And
how old were you then?
I was 13. Okay. 14. It was the summer between, so yeah, 14. And that was the first time that I went to the AFCC. First time I went to Stillwaters. And literally the first time that I went to youth, they told me, hey, sign up for camp. You ought to go. Mm-hmm. Cool. I didn't know anybody there at all whatsoever. But it was cool. It was a great experience. Probably my favorite by far of the camps just because of the story that came with it.
Which camp was it?
It was the Oklahoma camp. And from then, it was pretty consistent. I was always in the church. I never really strayed very far until it came to high school. I got into high school my freshman year, kind of cruised through. There was a little bit of like kind of jumping in, seeing a few things that I had never seen before, like drinking and running. Well, I'd seen drinking before, but not in the aspect of going out and partying and seeing weed, seeing fights, seeing stuff like that. And
so you just saw the weed, you didn't smoke it?
I did not, my freshman year.
So you didn't inhale?
I did not. And then sophomore year was when I started being able to drive, and it kind of went down a rabbit hole of drinking was fun, going around. Sexual immorality was awesome. I was like, wow, this is great. Yeah. You know, I didn't know that thing worked like that.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah, it was great. I just thought it was awesome. But
I feel like it's a little shocking to me that so many people we've talked to at least men have had a similar.
Yeah.
High school story.
Yeah.
Well, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll are pretty popular amongst us.
Yep.
But, it got really, really intense towards my junior year. Got into a lot of playing around with weed. I got into drinking really bad. And the sexual immorality, of course, just kept.
Just followed through.
Yeah, if I could find somebody, then it was go time.
Yeah.
And I ended up going to College Station after I graduated.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah,
oh,
of all man. Places. I went up there to go to school, and I never went to school.
So what was the school?
School, I went up there for engineering.
A&M, huh?
Which school? Yeah. Was it A&M?
Yeah, I went to A&M. I was in both. So I went to Blinn for like two classes, and then I had four or five at A&M.
Okay.
Never went to any of them, so I don't know what they were like. I don't even remember what they were. But I followed a girl up there, and that was kind of a mess up. But like a month after we got up there, me and her split off, and I was like, well, here we go. And so buckle up. And then I was working part-time at a feedlot up there, just run around, forklift, you know, loading trucks, whatever like that. And I changed that to full time, so I was working every day. I'd get up there about 6:30 and I'd leave, you know, 4, 5, 6, whenever I left in the evening time.
So you weren't even thinking about school
at
that point.
No. It was so from like 2 or 3 days after me and her split, I changed my schedule and then we went to, all right, now I'm going back to the gym. I was like, I'm going to transform a little bit. Mm. Transformed a lot because I went to the gym for, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours a day after I got off. And after that, I went to the bar. Well, being at the bar just exposed me to more and more with alcohol, with weed, things of that nature. And so I just continued in it and got really bad off. It got to a point where while I was in College Station that I would fall asleep next to somebody, wake up, they'd leave, and there'd be somebody else there that evening. Like, it was – that got really bad for me. The sexual immorality was a really big struggle for me, along with drinking, because it was every single night.
Wait, didn't you say you were 20?
Yeah.
That's all.
There's a lot of life to live before you turn 21.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was really bad every single night. My checks were going directly to the bar and to whatever else I get into.
So do you have like scholarships your parents were paying? Like what was going on?
No, I had a few scholarships. I had some cash scholarships. I had some transfer scholarships. I paid, you know, the rest off of it, which wasn't much, like a couple grand or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I'd worked the whole summer prior to going every single day, which, I mean, I had all the way through. I mean, I always worked my whole life. But that I, like, worked a couple different jobs, tried to get as much money as I can to try to pay for it up front. That way I didn't have that overhead debt, which it turned into, like, the most expensive social experiment rather than school. I got out of school, and it was cocaine, weed, drinking, whatever I could find to get into. That was where I was going. Lots of sexual immorality, things of that nature. And I got a call one night from my little sister. It was December. It was December 18th or 19th, and I just got back from the bar. No, I was just about to go to the bar, and. No, the first call was the night before, and it was from her, and she had called me, said, "Hey, how are you? How you been? We haven't talked to you," because at this point I haven't talked to my family, my friends, anybody back home for like a month or better.
Yeah.
Not even my mom and dad. I haven't talked to them.
You're isolated.
I was completely. Like, there was no part of me that wanted to communicate with that, because I didn't want them to see how I was.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to stop either. You know, I was so driven to just stay where I was. She called me just out of the blue and said, "Hey, you know, we haven't talked to you in a while. We kind of miss you. Wondering when you're going to come back. We want to see you." And her friend as well, they both called. And that broke me really hard. That was before I was going to the bar. I ended up not going to the bar that night. I went home. I went to the gym. And I just worked out. And then I got done at the gym. I just went and ran. Just, it was raining outside. And I remember just, like, trying to get through my mind and just trying to think and, like, what am I doing? Why am I? At this point, you know, I was raised in a good Christian family. Like, they went to church. I was always in church. And the next night, I was about to go to the bar again. And my little sister called me, and she said, "Hey, Bubba, I miss you." Like, that was the first words to come through the phone. Said, "Hey, Eddie Bug, what are you doing?" "Hey, Bubba, I miss you. When are you coming home?"
"Yeah.
I miss you. Like, I want to see your face." Mm. And that destroyed me. Like, bottom down destroyed me. And that night was the first time that I had sat down and prayed in months. I prayed and I was like, "God, please give me a route back. Like, give me a route out of this. Like, hold my hand. Give me the strength. Like, I need it. I want out of this." The next day I went and put in my resignation at my job. I told all my friends, like, "Hey, I'm leaving. I don't know exactly when, but I'm getting out of here pretty quick." I went home that weekend and saw all them, you know, "Hey, how y'all been?" Give them hugs, you know, see each other. I came back with a trailer, and the next Wednesday I was back home. Mm. It was Thursday, one of the two. It was Christmas Eve. Mm. It was 3 days before Christmas when I went back up there. I packed all my stuff up, got all my affairs in order, and I was out. I had somebody coming to take over my lease on my apartment, and I was out of there. Christmas Eve, I came back home, and then Christmas Day, I was able to spend with the family.
Yeah,
and that was from then on, I was back at the house. I was able to be, you know, out of that situation. And started hanging out with her a lot more. And
you know, how'd y'all meet?
We met when I first came to Stillwater's, how I was talking about.
Where's Stillwater's?
Stillwater's in Carthage.
Carthage. So oh, you're from Carthage?
Yeah. So how I didn't know anybody coming into this church. Well, her brother and his best friend were the two people that kind of took me under their wing. Now, I'm
whistle britches.
I'm going into sixth grade. Like, I'm a year under where I'm supposed to be in youth. Mm. But they just said, go ahead and bring him in. Well, her brother and his best friend took me under their wing. We did some ranch rodeos. We were just hanging out together, all kinds of stuff. And just very blessed to be able to have that kind of impact on my life at that point. Because some of it, I mean, some of it was great. Some of it, like, there was a lot of stuff that I did, talking about the drinking, the drug and stuff like that, that kind of fed off of some of the people that I met there that had just kind of fallen out. Mm-hmm. But as far as her brother, her family and stuff like that, they were always, if I called, they were going to answer. If I needed anything, they were going to be there. Like, it was phenomenal to be able to have that type of relationship with somebody. Now, her particularly, me and her actually dated for, like, 2 months, whenever, how long was it? 1 month, whatever. Not very long. Whenever I first went over there and me and her brother started becoming friends. And I went and asked her mom and everything. Like, at the church, I went and asked her mom. I was like, hey, can I ask your daughter on a date? Took her on a date. And then she just, like, avoided me the whole time that we were supposedly together. And then it was, brutal. It broke me. That's why I tell her all the time now. I was like, if you'd just stuck it out then, we wouldn't have had to go through all this all this junk.
Good point.
Could have skipped it all. But no, it was great to be able, because like the impact that she's had, even after that, we were still friends, accountability. Like, it was always there between us, between me and her brother, between me and her friends.
Yeah. So y'all circles really.
Yes. Very tight. Very tight knit circle.
So like when you came back, from College Station, you were like, so Darlene.
No, I was not. I was in, I will say this though, there was always the way that she likes to describe it, and the way I've been describing it is like an emotional affair. Like, I've always kind of had a thing for, I guess you'd say, but I never really saw it as a possibility. So I didn't take it as like, I want to go be with Darlene. I thought, I just want to spend time with her. I want to be around her, things like that. Okay. So when I came back, I went with her to church on Wednesdays, and we hung out a lot more together. I go see her at work. She's working at a drink shop. I go see her at work every single day while I was going back and forth to EMT school. Mm. And so if I wasn't at school, I was with her, or I was, you know, working, whatever I could do extra. And I got out of EMT school and got hired on at the fire department in Marshall. Well, they paid my fire school, and that, after I started fire school, I took a turn right back to where I was in College Station. Mm. Me and my buddy got real bad off with, we were at the bar Friday, Saturday, Sunday. If we could be there, if they were open, if they had drinks, we were there. Mm. It was, I mean, right back where it was. I was drinking at the house every day, or we were going partying, or whatever the case was. That was a consistent, like, from the time that I got out of fire academy to the time, like, while I was at the fire department, every single night that I was not working, we were drunk, we were doing something that shouldn't have been getting into.
Yeah.
And that was consistent. And me and her kind of didn't talk near as much in that little gap of time. But it was November 11th or 13th of last year. I was drunk. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. I was headed to go duck hunting at a buddy's. I was headed to a buddy's house, so we'd go duck hunting in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I rolled my truck a few times down a cold county road. A situation that I should have, like anybody else, I feel like in that situation would have just, something would have took the head off. I mean, it would have not been good. Should have killed me. And I literally was able to bust my door open, push it over, because the truck's on its side, push my door over and hop out, jump on the road and go up down the road to find somebody. Say, hey, I got in a wreck. And the only marks I had on me was I had some burns on my arm. I bruised some ribs, and then I had burns on my leg, and I had a bust. My chin was busted. And that was a real big turning point for me, because that was a set immediate set realization, like, this should have killed me in an instant, and I'm still here to live and tell about it. And so I went and saw her the next day, and we talked about it, and that she was just like, wow, you didn't, like, that's, you got in a wreck last night, like, you just, you rolled your truck and you just fine. I was like, yeah. And so that was the turning point that kind of turned me, like, all right, I need to get back into God and back into the church. And so me and her talked a whole lot more. And I started going back into the church. I started being more adamant about, I want to serve in some aspect. And, like, I want to be able to share what I've done in the Reformation. But I want to mature to a point where I can do that. And so I did, all the way through to the end of December, last day of December, New Year's Eve, or we were at our lake house, and she had come over there with me, and we had been, you know, joking back and forth about getting together. And I asked her out, and she said yes, so it's stupid on her part.
How did it feel when she said yes?
Oh, my goodness, man. Like, 7 years just got lifted off my shoulders. Like, I mean, that was something. Apparently, she just didn't care, but I cared for a while. Oh. But no, the
for the record, Darlene is in the building.
Like, right,
yeah, I can see her face right now. She's giving me dirty looks, funny.
But no, it was really cool watching God work in my own life, as well as working in the lives of the people around me. Like, working on my life, and then my life being able to be shown in my dad and in my mom and in my family. Mm-hmm. They see how God can really change a person, and that whole just length of time that still to now is just, it's cool watching it in my family. Because my family, yes, they're churchgoers, they all love the Lord, but if you looked at our lives from the outside of the church, you wouldn't see that, more than likely. And now you can. And that's something that I'm grateful for beyond.
I think it's important for, like, people can see what God can change in people, but also what God will do to change those people. Like, he's the one that knows us. Like,
oh, yeah.
He's the one who knows the inner parts that we don't even know about. And he's the one that's able to really speak into those spots in a way that nobody else can. So
absolutely.
I think a lot of people tend to forget, like, you know, people will have their testimonies and everything, and they'll be like, well, that's cool, that was good for you and everything, but dude, God will hit you with a 9-pound hammer.
Oh, yeah.
Right in between.
Especially
your eyes.
If you don't like to listen. If you're real adamant about not listening, or if you're like, all right, I'll entertain it for a minute and then I'll just go back to what I was doing. He'll hit you in the mouth. Mm-hmm. He'll bring you back to him some way. He's very convincing.
Yeah, definitely.
I used to be like an ash coal, you know? Like, I would like, survey the crowd, ask for a lot of advice, and then just do the opposite.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm glad that I did on most of that stuff. I'm glad that I didn't listen, because I really know. I really know without a shadow of a doubt. I know the truth, you know? Mm-hmm. And you can't convince me otherwise. You know, but I know for a lot of people, there was, you know, you had some things that happened that got your attention when you were kind of running from God. And, you know, one of the things that caught your attention was Darlene. Mm. It sounds like
another thing was
a car wreck. And, like, you know, people joke, and, like, I know there's probably some people listening to this podcast that, like, went to church camp or came to youth group because they were chasing a girl or a guy. And, like, I don't want to discount that. Like, I don't really care why you come to church.
As long as you're there in the doors.
Yeah. Because if you're here, you're going to be around believers.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, there's some quote. It's like, show me your 5 closest friends and I'll show you your future. You know?
Yeah.
And I think for me, it's been instrumental to be involved in a men's ministry in a church with a group of guys that are authentic and real. Mm-hmm. And with I have opportunities to be discipled and to disciple.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm kind of curious about that, because, you know, we heard kind of what was going on, and then, you know, like, you came back to church and then you met Darlene, but, like, mechanically? Like, was there like an event or a group or, you know, you said you were going to get involved in serving. Like, what, how did that, was that how you ended up in the Wrangler program?
Well, so I'd been in the Wrangler program prior. In 2020, I was in the Wrangler program. 2022, I was in the Wrangler program. And that was not a year I should have been in the Wrangler program. I will go out and flat say it. I was not. I do believe that God used me.
Jerry Hill, also, are you listening? Yeah.
I do believe that God used me in some pretty cool ways. But I also don't believe that if I was in that situation that I would do it again. Because as far as a maturity level and like a age and your faith level, I was not anywhere to the point where I was trying to serve the Lord in any aspect that I should have been. Like, I was still drinking heavily, underage, you know, honor the law of the land because they're appointed by God. That was, you know, I could trespass, go shoot a deer and it didn't hurt me at all. I go drink, go get drunk, come home, you know, drunk as I'll get at 1 o'clock in the morning. Me and the girl I was with at the time, we, you know, sex was not a uncommon thing. It was, nothing was looked at as a,
as sacred.
Did you ever pray right before you had sex with her?
I did not.
Okay. I guess I'm the only one.
You're the only
one. I'm the only one.
I will say that. When I heard that, that was the only one. I was like, no, because I feel like at that point, then I would just have the, if I had the discipline to pray before I had sex with her,
yeah,
then I feel like I'd have the discipline to not have sex with her.
Oh, the problem is, like, she was like, let's pray first, and got down and prayed. So she's the one that prayed. And I was like, I guess we're doing this.
Got roped and doped.
Whatever you say, man, let's just get this. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because our concept of things, you know, like, God exists outside of space and time and matter. He created all of it. And so, us dumb humans, you know, we're like, well, I'm going to sin, so I'm going to, like, preclude myself from this God thing. Right. This idea that we can, like, run away from him is just so stupid because he's everywhere, you know?
It's
like,
stupid, but it runs actually, rampant.
It's like it hurt me, but, like, when I look back, I'm like, that's really wild. You know, I feel like he was trying to get my attention, you know? He was like, here's a sign that maybe what you're doing is not smart. But the other side of it is, like, dude, everybody's a little bit different. We're all God's kids directly. Like, he doesn't have grandkids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, like you said, you think God used you even during that time. And I think that's true. God always uses what you have. And it's never what you don't have.
God will sometimes use the atmosphere that you're in to improve you in a position you're not supposed to be in.
Absolutely.
And, like, I know, like, you were talking about how stupid it is to be running from God. I heard something about the book of Jonah the other day. You know, the book of Jonah was actually considered a comedy in a lot of areas because of how stupid, like, the Jews reading this book and were hearing Jonah trying to run from God. They're like, that is the dumbest stuff I've ever heard, trying to run from God. So that's what made it all more funny to the Jews of the time of reading the book. Like, they knew, like, you can't run from God. You can't get away from him. So, like, why even try? But, you know, the story.
I mean, in that sense, it's almost hypocritical to think that a comedy, just because.
Right.
For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. In whatever aspect that you sinned or whatever aspect that you've fallen short, that's still running from God. That's still turning away and, like, I want to do my own thing and see if it works.
Yeah.
So here's a question. I think it's fair. So during the time where you were drinking and dealing with sexual sin and all these things, do you think if you died, you would go to heaven?
I do. Because it's not it's not that I didn't know God. I knew who God was, and I had given my life, like, I had surrendered. I'd had the point in my life where I'd asked Jesus, hey, would you come into my life and will you please, like, I want to devote myself to you. Now, I ran and I turned away and I did things that I was not at all proud of. But there was that turning point that I had given my life to Christ, that I had said, God, you are my Father. I believe in you wholeheartedly. Like, I know you're here. I know you're with us always. And, that kind of goes with that verse in Ezekiel.
Bring it out.
Ezekiel 26:36, I believe it is. Ezekiel 36:26 says, I will give you a new heart, put a new spirit within you. I'll remove your old heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. I will place my spirit within you and cause you to follow my statutes and carefully observe my ordinances. And that's one of the biggest verses I like to use when somebody's talking about, like, you can lose your salvation, because you can't. Like, once you're given that new heart, once you're transformed, then all it is once you entertain that you have a new heart, is the more effort and stuff that you give to it, it's going to spread.
Yep.
It's like a disease that's going to run rampant through you. Like, mm-hmm. that's something brand new, and it's like if you put ice in water. Mm-hmm. That ice is cold, the water's hot. Mm-hmm. You can put that ice in there, and it's going to make all the rest of the water cold.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to cool everything off. It's going to spread throughout you. Well, you know, whether or not that you think that you're following that, mm-hmm. it's going to show in you in some aspect eventually. Yeah. Like, for me, whenever I came back and I started really turning around, God just got right to work using me. Like, mm-hmm. I was getting back into it. He was showing my family himself through me, mm-hmm. and just, like, the mode that I was changing. Within, like, February, I was starting to feel a real heavy tug towards youth ministry. And, of course, I had applied for the Wrangler program. I was going to go back in, and I was going to go do that with a heart that was going towards God, with a spirit that was really wanting to help the kids out and really wanting to be used as a tool to be able to do whatever I could to grow the kingdom, you know, make heaven crowded. And I was getting used right off the bat.
Yeah.
There was not a period where, now, yes, there was, I need to reconnect. Like, I've been running, and I need to give this to you. But as soon as that was like, God, forgive me for, you know, the things I've done, the running from you, the sins that I've done, give me the strength and help me to turn away from all of that. And it was immediately, let's get to work.
Yeah.
You've got things that you've got to do. I've got stuff planned for you. Let's go. Let's get on it.
And I think that's really a testimony of God's goodness.
Absolutely.
Because I can't tell you how many times, like, God has just shown up in my life after, like, earlier that day where I messed up on something, or, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not maintaining a standard for myself, even, like, for my job or whatever, like, whatever disappointments that I have, and God's goodness just shows up, and I'm like, God, I didn't even ask for forgiveness yet. You know what I mean? And we're just kind of like,
I think that's an interesting concept, because, right? Like, I understand repenting. Mm-hmm. But, like, there's a difference between salvation and sanctification.
Yeah.
Okay, so, like, I think we get real confused about that. Like, I ask the Holy Spirit to come in my heart. I believe that Jesus died for my sins. I'm saved.
Sealed.
That's done. No past, present, future sins, that's taken care of. And so I don't know. Like, look, I'm not the most religious, like, scholar, you know, Bible understander in the room. But, like, I think I understand this pretty good. I'm saved. That doesn't mean that I'm perfect and that I'm going to do good. And, like, dude, I might be wrong on this, but, like, I don't think that that means that I have to ask for forgiveness every time I say fuck. Like, I don't think that's the way that works, because, because, like, Jesus died once and resurrected once, and that was good for everything, you know? So,
and I think that's a part of, again, seeing the goodness of God and everything, but also understanding the heart posture. Jesus is the one who knows your heart. And you know, that's something that I've heard, like, I heard all in church growing up and everything, but even more so, he knows whenever your traumas are affecting you and you don't even realize that they're affecting you. Jesus knows the hearts of man, and he knows the
things. And men can't know.
Exactly.
And only God can know.
And whenever we have a situation where we've just messed up, and we know that we're wrong, that we know that we're not in the position that we want to be in, and we've fallen short, that's where God is the one who shows up. And that's where we're in a covenant with him. That's why it's important for people to realize that whenever you receive Christ, you are no longer just a creation, but you are a son.
Yeah, you've been adopted.
You have been grafted in and adopted into a family of the God of generations.
Absolutely.
The God of all ages, of everything. And, you know, it's pretty cool whenever I think of how whenever we get to heaven, we're going to get to be around people from like the 1600s. We're going to get to be around people from like who saw Jesus walking in Jerusalem. You know what I mean?
Just imagine getting to meet the guy that was hanging on the cross beside him.
Yeah, exactly. And people tend to forget that it's not just like us. Like there's not just like little sections in heaven for us. We're going to be grafted into a whole family. My dad said something years ago. We were in New Mexico. We had just left the job site. We were headed back to the hotel. And I looked at my dad and I said, "Why do you want to go to heaven?" And he was like, "Well, the other part doesn't sound too great. Like the other place doesn't sound that fun. But first and foremost, I look forward to seeing the awesome collective worship of the Almighty God."
Absolutely.
And that blew my mind because my dad was a welder. Like he drank for like 40 years. And like in towards the end of his life, like he really, I know that God really got in touch with him because of the statements that he made with that. And it blew my mind. And I asked him, I was like, "How do we get to where we get to see that awesome collective worship?" I was just, you know, just like picking, asking questions type thing. And he said, "By his wounds, we are healed." And that, I didn't need any more theological discussion, any more like questions about like whether or not my dad knew God just because he said fuck or shit or, you know, some bad word or something. I never had that question because I knew his heart position and I saw his life change. And that's where the outside of and, you know, we can sit here and pick apart anybody about things. There's certain areas where obviously you're not supposed to say stuff. But in the same aspect, we can't be the ones looking at people and saying, you know, "You're not going to heaven" or anything like that, because that's God's.
Yeah, I mean, we're not the judge. Like Stack, you know, Travis's uncle preached here a couple weeks ago, and he was like, "You know, I'm no judge, but I'm a fruit inspector." You know?
Yes.
And I think that's an interesting take, but I was reading something yesterday or today. I'm kind of a little confused because we went to the fight, the Tyson fight, and got home at like 3 a.m. And then the next night stayed out till 1 a.m. So,
same.
and I got up and went to 9 a.m. church.
Very disappointing fight, by the way.
Yeah, but Jesus was in this house as a guest, and like the older sister, maybe somebody knows Miriam, the story.
Yeah.
The older sister was like very busy, very like helping. She had a lot of volunteer stuff going on. She was like serving a lot of people. And the younger sister just like sat down and listened to Jesus.
Yeah.
And then the older sister was like complaining to Jesus.
"What are you doing?"
And she's like, "Hey, you know, don't you think my sister should be helping me? I'm trying to do all this work." And Jesus was like, "Don't worry about her. She's chosen the better lot." Mm-hmm. And like, that's, I think when we think about our servant leaders, we think about people in the church that are doing the business of the church. That's a heavy load. And like, these people need rest too, you know? And it's just like an interesting thing. The fact that I think the three of us men are involved in a local church is great, because if I don't get involved, if I'm not helping in some way, I'm just not going to show up.
Yeah.
Because I've got other stuff to do, you know?
Absolutely.
So the fact that I'm here and showing up and present, and I feel like I'm a part of, you know? So like you said that you started applying yourself. Did you have like, was there like a mentor or somebody that discipled you or that you like drew close to when you started trying to turn your life around from going the wrong direction?
So yes, in a sense, I guess you'd say I turned more to a group. I turned back towards like Jared, like y'all know Jared, mm-hmm. who's a youth pastor here at Wilderness. I turned back towards, got back with Matt, Kyle Keeling, a bunch of the guys over at Stillwaters that are really spiritually driven men. J.R. Royst, I talk with him a lot. I started surrounding myself with those type of people more rather than being, because the way I see it is it's like if you want to have muscles and you can go to the gym, you're gonna grow muscles, all right? You're going to get bigger. Can you still have muscles when you're not going to the gym? Yes. But are you going to get any bigger without going to the gym? Are you going to get any further off without going to the gym? Are you going to be, you know, you really got to put yourself in the best position that you can to succeed.
And then if also, your goal, like, surrounding yourself with people who are challenging you to lift. I mean, that's
like,
always a big
accountability partners are the best. Like, y'all two, I'm sure, are for each other. Y'all see a lot of each other, like me and a couple of buddies of mine. Like, if I'm going through something and there's something that's like hitting on me, like her,
she's hitting heavily, on you.
Yeah, absolutely, man. She hits me too all the time. But no, like the accountability that we have for each other is a reason that we're as strong and as grown as we are together. Is because like she has no problem if I'm in the middle of doing something or if I'm doing something that's maybe a little bit questionable, she'll hit me in the face with it. Mm. She'll straight up just like, hey, you sure that's something you want to do? Mm-hmm. Are you sure that's something you need to be doing? And it'll get me questioning enough to where I'm like, yeah, that's probably not somewhere I want to be.
Yeah.
And like, obviously, if there's a point for her to question it, then my spot as a potential mentor to somebody, what's it going to look like to somebody who's not in ministry?
Right.
You know, because like, and like what Trey was saying is like, and what you were saying, like talking about your hot posture, yes. Now, if you're sinning and you feel conviction over it and it's something that you see, then I definitely feel like that's something that you need to repent, turn away from when it happens. Like you need to ask forgiveness, definitely. Repent, turn away. If that's something you feel conviction about, if it's a genuine sin, but it is a lot about your heart posture. A lot of people see cussing and they see drinking in general, like at all, as this is something that you should not be doing whatsoever. Right. If you're in ministry, if you say you're a God follower or anything like that, you can't do this whatsoever.
Right.
There's no part in the Bible that says you can't drink.
Yeah.
I mean, Paul cussed whenever he wrote some of the books that he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no proof of that in the Bible whatsoever, but it's the outlook that you have on people. But definitely your heart posture is a big deal. Especially when you get to the point where you're talking about your own witness to other people. Mm-hmm. Like me personally, I'm working towards being more of a mentor in my own church. I'm in the Wrangler program. Mm-hmm. I try to help out with a lot of situations, you know, youth, tried to be a counselor, be a mentor to people.
Yeah.
And when you're doing that, you have to really protect your witness, because while it may not be something that's genuinely a sin or wrong,
mm-hmm.
how would somebody who's a potential to look at you in that sense, how are they going to perceive that exactly?
Yeah.
Because if they see you going out and having two or three beers, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you go in the evening and have a couple of beers. But somebody who looks at you as a mentor or somebody that's, you know, you're held to a really high standard.
Yeah.
And so you want to protect that as much as you can. Nothing wrong with it. But
I think that's like across the board for any man. Like, I know I've been around a lot of men who, if you wake up at like 4 a.m. with these guys and you say something before they've had coffee, bro, you'd question if Jesus was even in them at 4 a.m. You know what I mean? So
yes,
like it goes for everything. And that's where I think that the position of humility is something that's very important to pursue, and also not like puffing yourself up, which is easy to do in any circle.
Absolutely.
And whenever you realize that it's really about what Jesus is doing in me, and he starts to just clean things up in mm-hmm. your life, and you don't even realize it sometimes.
No, and you start to see it to where, yes, I feel conviction about the things that are sins, and I feel conviction about things that are going to bring me back, but I also, the things that are not going to progress me, at that point, he starts cleaning those things out. Like, hey,
you behind.
Don't need this. You don't need that. You don't need this couple beers in the evening. You don't mm-hmm. need, you know, this habit that's not necessarily bad, but it's not going to put you anywhere for it. It's taking up time. And so let's clean that out and let's replace it with something that's going to do better. Like you're, you know, whatever the case may be, driving around the pasture and playing on your phone till I have a bad habit of it. And she can.
Are you a doom scroller?
No, I'm not. Okay. But I will. Oh, well, she's looking at me. Turn
around, Pat. See, he wakes up in the depths of TikTok, and he knows how to make all kinds of engineering aspects.
Hey, I tell you what, I can do some DIY out of this world, though. But no, I have a bad habit of, like, my piece is in the wilderness, like going out into the woods, going out and riding around. Yeah,
in our piece is in the wilderness, too.
But, like, so we've got a lease pasture, a few hundred acres over there, and a lot of my peace comes from just driving out there, killing the truck, and sitting in the tailgate, looking at the stars, the moon. There's deer all over the place. Mm-hmm. And just being around that and being surrounded with, like, just the noises of the wind, or, you know, there's fish jumping in the pond over here. Okay. There's deer running around, chasing through the, you know, the little shallow parts of the pond. Like, stuff like that's just brings me so much inner peace. And then I'll get to the point where I'll sit over there and I'll play on my phone.
Yeah.
And I'll spend 2 or 3 hours doing that rather than sleeping.
Right.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing, but what's it doing progressing?
Right. Like, what's really
the time out in nature, not a big deal, but then I turn to my phone, I'll sit there for an hour playing on my phone while I'm sitting in the middle of the pasture.
Yeah.
Whereas I could replace that with 15 minutes or read my Bible, go to bed at a decent hour, and then how much better can that make your day and your life, and how much can you grow off of, let's say I do that, you know, 20 times in a month. Well, 20 times just reading your Bible, that's how many hours have you now got in reading your Bible that you wouldn't have had, you know, otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Travis really had a sermon like, if you don't do what you know you should, it won't do you any good. Yeah. Was like the title of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The enemy wants to distract us from being involved in the kingdom. And whenever we even start to pursue the kingdom, like, he's going to send those distractions. What do you think that the distractions for today's youth is
for today's world? The accessibility of stuff.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest one, because yes, it's you're going to deal with stuff when you're not a believer, but at that point you're not really dealing with it because you don't know, like, you don't have something that's telling you, hey, you don't need to be doing this. Like,
you don't
that's
know there's not a fight.
Yeah, you don't know there's a fight. There's a fight going on for you. Like, God's fighting for you before you even know it. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong on that whatsoever. But once you realize that fight's going on, you decide to go ahead and hand it. Mm-hmm. Like, the fight was won. The fight is just you. Like, it's all your own mental aspect. Once you give that to God and you're like, hey, I want to follow you, at that point you're a threat to the devil. Mm-hmm. Because the people that he has that haven't given their lives to Christ, that haven't, you know, just acknowledged that the fight is already won and that all they have to do is just turn that way, he doesn't have to bug them. Like, he has them. Like, he wants them. They're there. But the second that you turn your life over, then you're a threat, because now you can go grab somebody that's not saved. And you can start converting, and you can start, you know, God can start running through you and just using you. Then you're going to get hit real hard. And you'll see that a lot with, I feel like the biggest thing probably in today's youth is the accessibility. Like, this phone right here, I can go into my Safari and look up anything I want to.
Yep.
Whether it's porn, whether it's, you know, violence, gun shoot, whatever the case may be, I can go, doesn't matter. It's right there.
Yeah.
And it takes literally nothing but a few taps of my thumb and I'm right there. Mm-hmm. And that's immediately. I mean, lustful. That's something that hits you. Drugs, alcohol, stuff like that is so
And
watered down these days.
They even like target youth these days. That's something that's so crazy to me, is that you'll have these apps and then all of a sudden you'll see like some advertisement and you're like, what the crap?
You know, Facebook Marketplace has been showing like absolute nudity.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just scrolling through and looking TikTok at like shitbox like cars.
TikTok's gotten, I've heard TikTok's gotten bad about it too. And mine's just full of fishing and DIY. So I don't really
it breaks my heart to know that, you know, there's kids out there that have access to this stuff and they have no idea that they've been targeted.
Yeah.
Because like, that's the reality, is that Satan wants you to be distracted. He wants you to
lie, steal, and destroy.
Yeah. And the more that we are just ignorant, or maybe not ignorant, but not in the fight, not intentional about pursuing that fight, then I think that's whenever a lot more issues come up than what we seem to realize, because there's so many, like, we're living in a culture now that has targeted certain demographics of people, and by conquering those demographics of people, those people have then been able to help the enemy that conquered them.
Yeah.
And people don't realize that it's just like a whole flow of warfare that has been going on for thousands of years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at it in the aspect of, in the past, I don't know, several years, let's just say, what are some things that have changed that, as a country, like, have changed to make it more accessible and so watered down to the point that they don't think it's really an issue anymore? Like, weed's become something that's, which I'm not going to say weed's a bad thing or wrong or anything like that, but when used to the point where it comes a reliance and an idol, then it is, because then it's becoming more a part of your life than just recreation. It's becoming an idol.
It becomes an identity.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the same thing with this phone. This phone will become an idol just as quick.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many different things that we don't think about that could be something that's harmless in and of itself, but when you apply it so much, or when you apply it to your life in such a way that it becomes who you are, it becomes something that you consistently are relying on, then it becomes an idol.
I mean, every bad, like, character flaw that I have has a positive opposite, you know? And, like, we've talked about the fruits of the Spirit before, but, like, we were talking about salvation being different than sanctification, and I just had this thought. Step 3 in Alcoholics Anonymous is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. And your will is your thoughts, and your life is your action. And so I think that's much more in line with sanctification. It's less trying to save you from going to hell, but it's more about making a daily decision to just try to do the next right thing, to try to be there when somebody needs help, to try to help, you know, put good into the world instead of propagating evil. And, like, instant gratification is just rampant. And the lie is way more enticing than the truth. Yeah. Because the truth starts with, we're all sinners.
Yeah.
So, like, when you walk up to somebody, it's like the most loving thing to do to tell them the truth. But if they're not a believer, they're going to be resistant to that. They're gonna be like, I'm not wrong, I'm not evil. I mean, you said God made me, so, like, you know, I'm not a sinner, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, we are.
Yeah.
He didn't make us sinners.
Right.
We chose that with our own free will.
And that's the other thing, is the culture of the world is something that is always trying to perpetuate more ungodliness. And they've started to, like, really intertwine them and, like, have all these different identities flowing around. And money is at the core of a lot of them.
Because the love of money. The love of money. Yeah. Money itself is
right. It's a tool. Yeah. And it can be used neutrally any which way
you want. I think there's a lot of examples in the church where money is
absolutely
really used well. You know?
But certainly there's also – and there's examples – everywhere of money being terribly used. I mean, you look at all these bets that just took place against what I'm willing to bet 90% of the people who were watching that Jake Paul Mike Tyson fight had a suspicion that it was rigged somehow. Yeah. And yet you had all these people that still were betting on it, were betting against it, you know. And I get it, like, It's the unknown factor into it, but could you imagine, like, if some of that money had went to go into doing something good?
Yeah.
And not
even just, like, a tithe aspect. Like, what if you went to the store and you went grocery shopping regular and you, like, here's some bread, some beans, and a little bit of rice. Let me take this up to the shelter up here. Let me take it to Mission, you know, whatever the city is. We have a Mission Carthage. So, I mean, like, there's so many aspects or so many different things that could be used for good that we just take fully for granted.
Yeah.
Like, we want to have our own instant gratification off of it rather than using it for somebody's potential eternal gratification, because those small things we think of as so small and so insignificant can be the change to somebody else.
Yeah.
And all it takes is one question, like, why would you do this?
Right.
And then all of a sudden, here you go sharing the gospel with them, possibly for the first time. And that was their chance to hear Christ, all because you gave them $3 on the side of the road, or because you took a little bit of rice to the homeless shelter. You know, there's some really cool ways that God uses us and uses our generosity whenever we give it. Mm-hmm. Like, I cannot wait until I get to a point to where, yes, I love the idea of going and tithing and doing all that and being able to be a financial aspect to the church.
Yeah, I think it's necessary also.
I do feel like it's something. But not a requirement. Not a requirement. It is something that once you grow closer and it's something that you feel led to do, you know, it's all about how, if you feel led to do it, then do it. It says do not give out of,
you know, the intent to receive. Yeah,
don't give out of the intent to receive, and also don't give out of feeling like you need to.
Yeah.
And but I cannot wait until the point where I'm financially to the point that I can just be outrageously generous, mm-hmm. and just see how that changes something. Like, I want to see how God uses that, because that is, I want to get to a point in my life where me and her are set, we have kids, we're set, we have a house, we don't have to worry about groceries and stuff, and we can be outrageously generous.
Well, let me know when you get there.
I'll definitely.
It may be years and years until then. But.
In my experience, you know, like I said before, God always uses what you have, not what you don't have. Yeah. And I think that he's given you an opportunity to give a lot. Like, you know, like, you were my daughter's wrangler when she went through
and she opened up so much at that camp too, by the way. A lot of those kids really, like, found something in themselves, like, doing the whole camp experience, you guys leading them. And I always love AFCC camp because, you know, I've been involved with other camps and I've seen a lot of things, and you know, you may be leading somebody out on a horse that have never been on a horse, that is white knuckled going out the gate and terrified.
Yeah.
But on the way back, they're laughing. They're having fun. They've overcome some fear, and we're able to witness to people in where they are.
Well, the goal in that is just simply breaking down barriers, because especially, like, when you're scared of something to the point where you're not sure that you would do it outside of, you know, maybe camp, and you've never done this before in your whole life. Like you said, some of them have never been on a horse. Some of them have never seen a cow up close. Mm-hmm. When you conquer a fear along with another group of people and y'all all work together, that builds a bond that is so strong. It's so cool to watch. Not only be able to watch, you know, me be able to grow with those kids whenever I have a group of, like, we had about 15, 20 kids, something like that.
Yeah.
Well, not only watching me and y'all be able to grow with those kids, but watching those kids grow together. Like, we had 3 different churches in that group.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of it, you wouldn't be able to just differentiate which church was whose. Because everybody was talking to everybody. Everybody knew whose name.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was really cool just to watch the youth grow together, not just us be able to grow and attach to the youth.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like I said, I saw that my first year in 2022 when I was a wrangler too. Going back, I don't think it was a year that I should have been, but I was definitely used in a mighty way. I mean, it's, God doesn't always call the equipped; He equips the called.
That's it.
So, if you're called to go do something, then you're going to be given everything you need to do it.
What was the most impactful thing thus far in your experience with the wrangler program? You know, either the trainings or just the doing of it, or experiences with, you know, campers or.
Yes, sir. So probably the most impactful thing to me is watching kids who have not said anything, who I have no previous experience with. I don't know this child from Adam whatsoever. I don't know, not even children. I mean, some of them are 18, 19 years old.
Yeah.
I've never seen any of them. And then all of a sudden it goes from, I've never seen you. You haven't talked this whole 4 days we've been here.
Yeah.
The last night in the war room, you come to me and you're like, hey, man, you just said these few words, or somebody said these few words, and it stuck out to me, and I want to know more about it. And the first question that you almost always got to ask is, are you saved?
Yeah.
Do you know Christ? And when that look of curiosity, like, you see a look of curiosity in their eyes. There's a difference between that sparkle, like, yes.
Yeah.
That immediate yes. Then there's a kind of, I think so. And then there's that just look of blank, I have no idea what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And that's the point that I just feel like God rubs his hands together. He's like, get ready. Here's a show coming. You know, that is the coolest thing that I've been able to be a part of, is be used to lead somebody to Christ. Yeah. Like, God leading people to Christ through you is an amazing experience, one incomparable to anything else. Like, absolutely, being able to see the light come into somebody for the first time is life-changing.
Well, I want to affirm you. I think that I can tell that God's working through someone else when I see them get excited about the work God's doing in other people.
Yeah.
You know, I can tell that somebody's really struggling when they get excited about the work God's doing with themselves, because that's a selfish thing. And I'm not saying that that's all bad, you know, but it's really cool to pour out into somebody, you know.
And I think that people do themselves a disservice by limiting our church experience to our phone, limiting our church experience to live feed through, you know, even if you're just getting church through a podcast or something. I think, like, there's nothing wrong with those things at all. But I think that you really do yourself a disservice by not being involved with a church that's not, that someone that isn't trying to learn more about them's faith, to be discipled and to disciple. Because, and like people say, you need to go disciple people. Let me tell you, if you're being discipled, you're going to disciple just by pouring out. Like, you can't help it. Like, it just overflows.
Yeah.
And whenever, like you said, when you see God, like, start to turn some gears, start to turn some lights on in people, that's whenever you get to see people that you really don't even know. And you may not see very often, but you see them every year continuing in the camp. Wait until you start seeing the people that are close to you.
Yeah.
That's something whenever, like, my friends, like, start to reach out to me, ask me about, you know, what God's doing in my life and stuff like that. That's where I really get excited, because I love sharing what God does. His mercies are made new every single day.
Absolutely.
And if you will just look for his goodness, and if you will just look for the things that he's doing, it gets overwhelming, the stuff that he does.
It is. And like you said, the people close to you is really a cool thing to see. Like, being able to, like, when I came back from College Station, and this past year, really, whenever I started changing, like, after I'd gotten that wreck and I started really morphing my life to more align with what I wanted to see out of myself, what God wanted to see out of me, being able to, like, my family be like, where are you going? Like, what's your plans this weekend? What's the goal here? What's this? Be able to say, I'm going to the church, or I've got this event that I'm doing, or I'm going to a Wrangler meeting, or, hey, me and, you know, so-and-so are finna go over this scripture, or whatever the case may be. Being able to watch the gears turn in their head after you say that, and they haven't heard that out of you. Like, they see you is you were a drunk. You just came back from being a drunk, like, complete and utter. Like, I'm 20 years old. I'm not old enough to drink right now. And for 3 years of my life, I spent, or 2 years very strongly of my life, I spent just wasting away.
Yeah.
Being able to come back and just the rebound that I had. I mean, the whole point is, I mean, you can take 1,000 steps that direction, and thank God, just going to leave you in the dust. He's not going to come towards you. But you take 1,000 steps that way, and all you got to do is turn around. He's right behind you.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no point where he's not going to be with you. No matter where you try to run to or where you try to turn, he's going to be right there.
Yeah.
Like, it's right there with you. And like you were saying, you feel like they do a disservice to themselves of not being able to be in a church and being right there in person. Yes, I believe that too. Just because I've seen and I've been a part of worship services that make you fall to your knees. Like, physically, you cannot help but to put your hands up and fall to your knees. Like, the power that comes in just absolute worship. Like, I'm getting chills about it right now. When you are just in a room full of people that are devoted to, this is me singing praises to the one who deserves everything that I can give him. It's such a just a breathtaking view. Mm-hmm. And it's something that it's hard to get from a phone outlet or, you know, a television screen or something like that. Yeah. But when you're engulfed in the presence of God, it's such a different feeling.
Yeah. Well, Colby, what's next for you ministry-wise? Are you still going to be involved in the Wrangler program? Or
I am. Me and Darlene are getting married in June of next year. And so we're going to be we're both going to be Wranglers at Teen One. We're getting married, and so we're doing Teen One, which is the first camp. There's three camps. Just for anybody who doesn't know, there's three camps. There's two teen camps and a preteen camp. We're doing Teen One. We're getting married right after Teen Two, and then after that, it's going to be our period. We're just going to enjoy and figure out being married for a few months and just really set in stone our marriage before we, you know, go outside of, before we start branching out as a couple and as a unit in Christ, figuring that out and really putting together what it means to be a unit in Christ, to bring the two together to serve God in one aspect.
Have y'all gone through like the Love and Respect workshop?
No, sir.
Oh man, dude, there's one coming up. It's the week of Valentine's Day at Crossbrand. Y'all should absolutely, like, I'll get you Paul Roberts' number. Like, you gotta go if you can possibly go. It's like Friday night, like 6 to 10, and then like Saturday to 3 or something. Like,
so it's just a weekend event?
It's just, yeah, it's okay. Just like absolute. Dude,
I think I'm gonna go to that.
Yeah.
Just as a single man.
High level. And you can get the book and read the book, but like Paul said in his podcast, he was like, the class is better.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. Like, my wife and I went through it before we were married, while we were living together, and she didn't believe in God. Mm-hmm. And like, she was like, that was a really good, you know what I mean? Yeah. So like, even from that perspective.
Yeah,
is really good.
Yes,
I've got another question. Have you been to men's boot camp or a Freedom Weekend or anything like that?
I haven't. No,
oh,
no,
dude.
Yeah, well,
we gotta get you on the list time, dude.
Well, when we came up here, it was pretty much right after camp when all the kids from the camp got baptized. When we came up here, they had just had Freedom Weekend and the men's boot camp, all that stuff, whatever Travis was talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and Freedom Weekend. It really. I talked with Darlene about it and told her that that's something that I would like to go to.
Oh, dude, highly recommend it.
Very much so. It could be a great step for you, and it could be a great step for your church also to getting something started up for men's. Because, like, what you described earlier for when you were in College Station where you isolated yourself, you didn't have any godly friends around you, I cannot tell you how many men I know of who you just described.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. There.
And I was one of them too. Like I was on the road working for a long time, everything. And that isolation is something that you can get so comfortable in. And it's easy to do because it feels good. Like it's right. And I know for me, whenever I made that decision to not be isolated anymore and actually be involved, a lot of things just changed.
Well, like for me, it was a sense of temporary fulfillment, but I filled my life with it so much that like every day I'd have to refill myself. And that's where I messed up, because my life I felt was full, but I had to refill it every morning.
Yeah.
And once you know, remove that and you put God in that place, it's not something that you have to refill every morning. Like, you are full and you're full always.
Yeah.
You still die to your sins daily. You still, you know, commit yourself every single day. You choose God every single day, but you never have to refill. Like, you are always going to have the Holy Spirit inside of you.
Yeah. I think that's an interesting outlook because, you know, like if your thing is sex or porn or, you know, drugs or alcohol, like that becomes a ritual. Which is almost religious, you know. It's a, you know, if we, it's weed, it's like you got to break thing. It down. Yeah. You got to pack the ball. There's all these things you have to do, and I think that it's a pretty close mirror, you know. If you want to follow Jesus, like, you know, you're probably going to need to read some. You're probably going to need to be around some believers. You're probably going to need to like go
set
to church.
Set aside some prayer time.
You know, yeah. So there's some things, and like I've said before, I believe that every conscious thought is a prayer. So we got to talk. We have this man time thing that's happening tonight. And one of our groups, we got to talking about one of the commandments or something, you know. And they were like, well, if you think it, you know, then it's a sin. So we got to shed some light on that. And Paul Roberts and I have talked about this at length. Paul's like, God made some beautiful women, you know? And he's like, I appreciate the beauty that God created.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You know? And then it's like, where do you cross the line? When you dwell on it.
Yeah.
You know? When you desire it, when you lust after it, you know? There's a difference between.
And I mean, like, there's an aspect, like, me and her, we're engaged. We're going to get married. That's set in stone. That's not something that's hidden from anybody. But it's also, when you dwell on lustful things, it's you're the bride of Jesus. Yeah. And at that point, you're the way I've heard it described, and I mean, you can take this however you want, but it's like you're cheating on Jesus, because that's your bride until you are married.
Yeah.
And y'all have that biblical matrimony marriage
foundation. Yeah.
Y'all, that is sinning just out of the fact that you're.
How's that going for you?
It's not.
How's that going for you? Because I imagine it's like really tough.
It is.
It's like a real problem for guys and girls, not just the dudes.
Yes. We're
not
like the only ones that struggle. Me and her have not had sex, but it's been very hard, like in a lustful sense. Like, obviously.
No pun intended.
Obviously.
Shut up, dude.
Darlene's laughing too, for the record.
Yeah, Pete, there's also a female in the room. But no, like, obviously that's something hard, because I wouldn't have chose her if I wasn't attracted to her. And like you said, God made some beautiful women. That is one of the most beautiful, that is the most beautiful woman that I've seen in the entire world.
Go.
Obviously, that's something that I want outrageously. That's something that I have caught myself dwelling on multiple times. But you have to have that relationship where you know that that's something that you struggle with. You know that that's something that you both struggle with, and that's something that you pray together on. Like, it's something that y'all have to commit together to, hey, we've got to make sure that we keep ourselves strong, because it just takes one, you know, to
it's put a slippery little slope.
It is very much so. It doesn't take much to just tip the wagon.
You know, it's a slippery slope, but also Jesus is really a firm foundation.
Yes.
That's absolutely something that like I thought about.
Man, that's a good
right
line.
Yeah.
It's a slippery slope, but Jesus is a firm foundation.
And he is something that you
that can might be really the title of this podcast.
Yeah, I think we need to put that in quotes, put that on the wall somewhere. Yeah.
Get some bumper stickers made. Maybe a hat.
We need to write it on that wall over there.
Well, I'll just grab some chalk before we leave. Well, yeah, man, I definitely want to commend you. I want to commend y'all. You know, I know some of the circles that y'all are in and everything, and I know that you've got some amazing men around y'all that are
and really women good, too,
and yeah, women who are going to build y'all up and you know, really help y'all in that. And you know, that's something that I can only hope for my children one day is to be in a community of believers who know Jesus, who want to pour into them and you know, really help people pursue
absolutely
Jesus. So I'm very proud of y'all. I'm very impressed by y'all. I guess you want to wrap this up?
Yeah, I know we can. Is there anything else you want to say?
I guess we pretty much hit it all on the head. But I mean, I do want to say that whether it's can't think of the word now, whether it's lust, whether it's, you know, whatever it is you're sinning with, whether it's lust, whether it's drinking, whether it's porn, whether it's whatever it is, yes, it's something that's God's a firm foundation. But if you let the world in just a little bit, like it gets to an overwhelming point to where you are so focused on that particular thing that you're like, there's nothing else in this world that I can turn to. Like, this is what I want right now, and I'm going to do it regardless of what I feel. And yeah, if you've got your head screwed on straight, it's something that you're going to feel bad about after that. You're going to feel the conviction of, you know, your actions. But there is always a point to turn around because you cannot tell me that if it's something that you're going to feel conviction about, if you're saved and this is a true sin, that there's not a point that you stop and think and you're like, should I be doing this?
Yeah.
That is your point. You can turn around. Mm-hmm. Like, there's that conscious thought in your mind. There's not a point that you can't say no.
All right, everybody. Sorry, we had a little bit of recording mishap, and we've had some audio level issues and consistency issues. I just want to let everybody know we have invested a chunk of money and have new equipment coming. So this should be the last episode where it's kind of problematic to listen. I hope we didn't bust your eardrums. We had some vocals that were too quiet before, and I think on this episode we finally got to a place where things were just too loud. We had a little bit, maybe 2 or 3 minutes of pretty good closing discussion that didn't get recorded because apparently there's a limit to how long you can record in GarageBand on an iPhone. We really appreciate Colby for coming in from out of town for us Tyler people. Again, this has been Two Dudes, One God Pod. Looking forward to seeing y'all next Friday.